So this talk is going to talk about service orchestration in the cloud in Ubuntu with Juju. So raise your hands, put your hands back up if you're using Ubuntu Server. Those of you that are using Ubuntu Server in the cloud, keep your hands up. Okay? Amazon, shout out what cloud you're on. AWS? Amazon? Any HP cloud folks here? Mostly Amazon? Azure? What? What cloud? NetApp? Did we run on NetApp? I don't think. Oh, well, whatever. Good enough. Anybody else? Anyone running on Azure? Microsoft Azure? Nobody? Very interesting. Yeah, we'll talk about Azure in a little bit. Okay, awesome. So, who are you? Oh man, what happened on my slides here? Hold on, I'm having an issue. Wow, I'm having a, there we go. So, this is the title of the talk. I'm gonna talk about service orchestration. How many of you like saw the title and you're like, service orchestration, that sounds like something awesome. How many have no idea what I'm talking about? Excellent, neither did I. So don't worry, we're going to get through this together. It's going to be great or horrible. So who am I? Why should you believe anything that I'm saying? My name is George Castro. I've been fortunate to be involved with the Ohio Linux Fest since it was like 200 people 5 years ago or something like that. I've given talks here on Puppet. I've given talks here on Ubuntu. And then I was a system administrator at Oakland University in Rochester Hills. That's in Michigan. That's right up here. And about 6 years ago, the opportunity to work on Ubuntu full-time with this cat right here presented itself, and it was just too awesome not to pass up. And I was doing kind of developer relations between Ubuntu and other projects and things like that around app indicators and desktop-y stuff. And the opportunity to go back and work on server-related stuff was really awesome. I had really missed the entire cloud thing that everyone was talking about, right? Last time I had touched a server, I was like a traditional server guy, and then Amazon happened, and then servers happened. So it's really cool. I get to work on server stuff now, which is awesome. So I want to talk about Ubuntu Cloud first. This is a Juju talk, but Juju is really a piece of a puzzle for what we call Ubuntu Cloud. This is like the server CD or whatever you put on your Pixie NetBoot thing or whatever. We call Ubuntu Cloud and server. It's pretty awesome. It surprises me, well, not really, the amount of people who think that Ubuntu is all about client, right? It's like, well, everybody knows that Ubuntu has desktops and now phones and stuff, and everyone's talking about the phones and click packages and, ooh, Jono Bacon, can I hold your phone? That's cool. And people tend to forget that Linuxes make really good Ubuntu servers. And over the past year, as I've been talking to people that I know that rely on Ubuntu Server every single day, love it, but there's still this perception that Ubuntu is all about clients. So I'm going to change that. I'm going to actually start this talk with 13 reasons why Ubuntu Server is awesome and you should use it. Obviously, a bunch of you are already using Ubuntu Server, but there might be features and stuff that you don't know about, because we actually spend a lot of time doing feature development on Ubuntu Server, which is weird. When I came over here, it was like, well, servers are supposed to be boring and it really never changes. Then you get all Unix-y and stuff, but whatever. So reason number one, OpenStack and the Ubuntu Cloud Archive. This is called UCA. How many of you have dabbled with OpenStack at all? What? No one? Are you serious? One dude? You went to a talk. Okay. So OpenStack is awesome. OpenStack is run your own infrastructure as a service. So if you look at what Amazon Web Services is, it's infrastructure as a service. That's becoming more PaaS-y, but you don't care about that right now. And the idea is that you have a cloud in your data center and your developers and your users at work or wherever, your organization, can launch instances on there that are virtual machines. And it gives you an API. And you can do cloudy things like horizontally scale and do all sorts of things. OpenStack is really cool. When I was growing up and learning Linux, right, it was all about LAMP. When I was in college, that's what everyone was into. It's like, man, this Linux thing is sweet, and the way you get it into Linux is you had to figure out LAMP, right? How do all those pieces fit together? PHP, and then that talks to a database, blah, blah, blah. I feel that if I was in school today, that OpenStack is this generation's LAMP, right? This is a thing that is really, really driving and leading adoption of Linux and clouds everywhere. Ubuntu, we've been shipping, OpenStack 3 years now, since the very beginning. Some of the people who are involved in the Ubuntu server team helped found the project, and it's been a first-class citizen in Ubuntu ever since. One thing we also commit to is called the Ubuntu Cloud Archive. OpenStack also does six-month releases, and they do snapshots. And what users were telling us, they're like, it really sucks, because I want to stay on an LTS, but I want to follow OpenStack, but I hate upgrading my OS on top of my cloud infrastructure. That's insane. That sucks. So what we do is we commit to taking the latest and greatest stable releases of all those six-month releases of OpenStack and backporting those all the way back to the 1204 LTS. So that's really huge if you're using OpenStack. I highly encourage you to check out OpenStack. It's awesome. Ceph, how many of you have played or have heard of Ceph before? Hopefully, more people. Ceph is a clustered file system. It's great. I cannot do it any justice in the 30 seconds that it tells me that I have to talk about it. So I highly encourage you to check out Ceph. InkTank, those guys are really great. We work with them very closely to ensure that the Ceph experience in Ubuntu is really great, and it's awesome. Check that out. Next reason, Metal as a Service. So I used to think Metal as a Service is like your radio station, right? It's like WRAI, you know? Oh, Metallica, Metal as a Service. That's exactly what that is. Not really. So while it should be. So while OpenStack is great, right, it's like sometimes you don't really need to run or build your entire cloud in your data center to get stuff done. As it turns out, people really like things about the cloud. Ooh, I can request a server and it shows up somewhere, and then I got an API to mess with it, right? But sometimes people don't want the complexity of building an entire cloud, but they want the kind of slick user experience that a cloud provides. And maybe they might not want to pay the VM overhead as well, right? Because remember, you have OpenStack and these are all virtual instances. So we developed a tool called Metal as a Service, which is basically a server that sits in your rack, and then you take all the servers underneath it or whatever, and you register them to this one master node. Then when you connect it to all your cloud tools, like say Juju, which I'll get to in a minute, instead of a VM firing up somewhere, Mass turns the machine on, it auto-provisions it using Pixie, installs the OS, cloud image, and then installs whatever you wanted on top, all automated, right? Then 2 days later, you're like, oh no, I need 3 more MySQL nodes, what am I gonna do? And then boom, 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 it does the same automated thing. It's pretty cool. So we call this Metal as a Service. And this is available in 1204, and we've got backports of that in there. Next awesome reason, the hardware enablement stack. How many of you are using this or know what this is? This is one of the coolest things that we do in all of Ubuntu, I think. So when I was a system administrator, I would buy like a ProLiant server and then I would install Ubuntu, and then 6 months later, a new ProLiant would come out and like the LTS version didn't work on it because the network card or something, right, was newer, and then you're like, oh no, and then I would have to run like a 6 month release of Ubuntu on that and keep upgrading it until the next LTS came out, and then I was good to go. So what we do now is we backport the kernel hardware stack from the non-LTS releases of Ubuntu, and we put that on the 1204 CD itself. What that means is that, as a server user, you can keep the stable, reliable, known user space, but use newer kernels fully supported by the Ubuntu kernel team to enable hardware for your NICs and your RAID cards and all sorts of cool stuff. So it's called HWE, the Hardware Enablement Stack. You're probably using it and don't know it, which is yay. Hardware certification, I'm gonna talk about this a little bit. We do work with vendors like Dell, HP, to do hardware certification, especially on the newer cloudy servers. I don't know how many of you are familiar with HP's Moonshot. It's like a really hyper-dense platform with Atoms, and they're making an ARM one. And Ubuntu's kind of like the reference platform there. Also, CalZeta makes some really, really high-dense ARM servers. So we've been running on ARM for a really long time, so obviously it's easy for us to support. Well, I wouldn't say easy. We give the same amount of attention to ARM that we do for x86. That's what I'll say there. Ubuntu guests on public clouds, this is really great. So we work with all of the major cloud providers to ensure that the Ubuntu images that you get on their clouds are of high quality and high performance. So for example, we work with HP Cloud to ensure that there are mirrors of all the archives in their cloud. If you deploy an Ubuntu AMI, an official one, in Amazon, You ever notice when you do an apt-get update and apt-get upgrade, it's almost as if it's local performance. So what we do is we work with Amazon to directly publish all of our packages and our images directly in their cloud. And we do this with HP Cloud as well. And Microsoft Windows Azure, something I'd never thought I would say at a Linux conference, but if you're using Azure and you're a Microsoft customer and you need a Linux, you can use Ubuntu with full support from Microsoft and Canonical. Things I thought I'd never say. But that's pretty awesome. And of course, in things like clouds, is like hosting, right? You want as many competitors as possible. So we work with as many of these cloud providers as we can to make sure that, you know, when you get an image, it boots up as fast as possible, right? When you say, I want an instance, we want that experience to be as quick and reliable as possible. LXC containers and Vagrant. How many of you have messed around with LXC? So LXC is really great. Again, that's a topic for an entire different talk. But sometimes you don't need something as heavyweight as a VM, so you can use a container. We put a lot of work in LXC, and I'm going to show you how we use Juju with LXC later on. Vagrant, I kind of pull these together because they're not really that related, but whatever. Vagrant, starting the last 2 months or so, we now have generated official Ubuntu Vagrant boxes that are supported by Canonical. So we think these are pretty awesome. So you can just download the box and get to work. How many of you use Vagrant? How many of your developers that use Vagrant? Another amazing tool that you should certainly look at. Landscape. So this is a commercial piece of software, but when we're talking about clouds and really large scale, this is the kind of stuff that is important to those customers there. This is our management tool. So if you wanted to know, you know, what's the name of the package version of Python across these 7,500 machines or whatever, you would use a tool like Landscape. And it also integrates with all of our cloud things and stuff. It's pretty awesome. Out of everything in the stack, this is the only thing that's not free software. Sorry. How Ubuntu is made is actually really important to a lot of people that use Ubuntu Server, right? One of the first things, one of the tenets of Ubuntu itself is that we don't make an enterprise edition that we charge a bunch of money for and then make a horrible free edition that or rebuild that you run, right? You get the same quality in the free edition that a paying customer does get as well. What's really great about that is when a very large company with a ton of Ubuntu machines finds a bug, and then they have support and they fix that bug, the free users benefit as well. We don't make an artificial distinction whether you're a paying customer or not. And I think that's very important. Of course, that because you don't have to pay and you get the same thing, it kind of makes making money a little bit harder. than traditional software companies. So it behooves us to provide really great services and support. And the way we do that is through a program called Ubuntu Advantage. This is, it's really great if you're investigating doing server support, especially in the cloud. Make sure you check out our prices, check out our competitors' prices. I think you'll find that they're pretty awesome. And our support guys are some of the smartest Unix people you'll ever meet in your life. They're pretty rock. And you're in fine company if you're using an Ubuntu server. Netflix has announced that it is going to move all of its servers to Ubuntu Server. So if you're using Netflix, you're going to be using Ubuntu Server. Hulu, half of it runs on Ubuntu Server, which is better than nothing. AT&T, NTT, Comcast. I can rattle off. I was supposed to write them down somewhere. But we have a lot of people really using Ubuntu Server in production, and that's really great. So, and then there's Juju. That's what this talk is going to be about. Any one of those topics that I talked about before could be a separate talk. And I certainly encourage you to check out those technologies, especially OpenStack and Ceph. But Juju I want to talk about because it's a little bit different, right? It's like the weird thing with the weird name. And it's like, what crazy stuff is Mark Shuttleworth naming today? That was a joke. Come on, loosen up, folks. Dang. So I wanted to spend time talking about Juju because Juju is the thing that ties all of this together and is kind of a paradigm shift from how you talk about doing stuff in the cloud. So that's why. So I'm going to start by telling you a story. How many of you heard of Discourse? All right, so Jeff Atwood, right, he was one of the co-founders of Stack Overflow. And he had fixed the Q&A problem, right? But he never fixed like the soft problem of how do you improve discussions on the internet, right? So he started this project called Discourse. It's free software. It's basically a forum, right? Except it's going to be way better than that. So it looks a little bit something like this. We're currently playing around with Discourse because it's pretty sweet. It's a modern take on forums and stuff. And I remember when he announced it as a free software project. Obviously, being a server guy, I immediately said, "Oh, I wonder what he's building it on, right?" And this happens, right? You go on Hacker News and you find out something cool someone's building, and you're like, "Oh, let me check it out. Let me check it out." And immediately, as soon as the project started, because we're a bunch of Linux nerds, right? The first thing people do is like, I think you made the wrong decision, right? I thought this was really awesome. So a lot of bulletin board software is written in PHP and uses MySQL. Jeff and his team decided to use Rails and PostgreSQL. And it was awesome to watch the initial few hours of this project being announced. And it's like people weren't talking about how it was great, that it was someone that was going to, you know, fix discussions on the internet to be awesome. It wasn't really about, hey man, this looks pretty cool. It's people saying, man, you made the wrong decision because I've never deployed a Rails app or PostgreSQL in my life. Therefore, you picked the wrong technology. I was like, how backwards is that? So I thought about that, and then I said, you know, I want to play around with Discourse too. And I looked at the installation instructions, and they were kind of complicated. I also have never done a Rails app either, right? And there's stuff, I was like confused. PostgreSQL I got because, you know, he did make the right database choice at least. Any MySQL people in the house? All right. Good job. I'm just kidding. Hey, man. I got a MySQL charm too. I'll get to MySQL in a little bit. It's sweet. So I found it interesting that like the project is less than an hour old, right? And people are already arguing about, dude, you picked the wrong database, right? Dude, you picked the wrong language, right? But we're so nerdy, that's what we do, right? But the reason I think that people really were confused, it was like, well, PHP and MySQL, people kind of know what to do. Okay, I copy over some stuff, and then I connected to the database, and I know how to do that. The other stuff's kind of complicated, right? He had Redis in there, and if you'd never done Redis before, you might not get it and stuff. So people were kind of saying, you know, you should be making these choices to make my life better. And I think that's horrible. I think in 2013, we should take configuration and deployment out of the equation, right? So we're nerds, so people are going to argue about this database and the language that this guy picked until the cows come home. But I don't think we should make technology choices, because I've done this before. I've sat there and then, I need this piece of software for my university. There are four of them. I only got two of them to work. Therefore, we're going to go with one of these two. I was like, man, think about it. That's actually irresponsible of me, right? But how many people do that? It's like, well, you know, this one actually looks nicer. It has the features I need. I just couldn't get it to work. It's like, man, it's 2013. We can do better than this. So what you really want is you don't really care about the details. You're like, dude, I want to form in a database, and then don't bother me anymore. So this is the solution. This is the problem that we wanted to solve. We realized that when you start to get to cloud scale, God, I can't believe I said cloud scale, when you're talking in instances where the numbers start in the hundreds instead of single individuals, you need to start managing things at a higher level. You need to be able to say, you know what, at some point, that specific machine, it becomes like a CPU. I know I want a lot. I know I want a lot of RAM. But generally speaking, what do I really want? I want a forum, and I want a database. So we started to build this tool called Juju. Now, because I don't really have internet here, I can't show you live, so I'm going to show you via the command line, okay? So what Juju does is it takes stuff that people want to run as services and deploys those into the cloud as quickly and easily as possible. And then anytime you want to make changes to those deployments, you can do so in real time. So we know we want a forum, so we can actually say Juju deploy Discourse. And Juju itself, in the config file, you have your Amazon keys. Let's use Amazon as an example, because it looks like a bunch of you are using Amazon. It's going to fire up an instance of Discourse. All the stuff that's in the instructions on how to deploy Discourse, a guy has taken and scripted those together. We call that deployment script a charm, and I'll get to those in a minute. So we have our forum. We know this forum needs a database. So we're going to do juju deploy PostgreSQL. Another instance is going to fire up an Amazon, and it's going to go ahead and install the AMI, and then it's going to install PostgreSQL. Now, we've got a forum, and we have a database. This is the most fundamental thing Juju does. That is the entire reason we invented Juju right here, right? We said Juju add relation discourse to PostgreSQL. Don't worry about the DB admin thing for now. You kind of need it, but for this example, you don't need it. What we do here is, you know, when you're reading things like how to install stuff and it tells you, well, first you're going to install this software, then you're going to install the database. Once you have the database running, you're going to run this SQL stuff, right? And it's always called like, you know, quickstart.python or something, right? And it seeds the stuff in the database, right? If you're doing this on multiple machines, what do you have to do, right? You have to install on each thing, right? And then you install the database, you install the software you want to connect to the database, right? But then you can't configure WordPress, let's say, until the database comes up, right? And you're doing this ping pong communication back and forth, right? And it's synchronous, right? You can't continue deploying your database until you get the information from the server and back and forth. This communication here is the problem Juju is trying to solve, and that's it. So, have I totally lost people yet? No, not? You don't have to lie, it's okay. Jono doesn't understand either. Okay, great. Don't worry, I'm gonna show you pictures later. Just seeing if you're paying attention. Right, so, what's really great here is we're relating things at the service level instead of the machine level, right? What's really awesome about this is now we know, discourse, the service, knows everything it needs to talk to PostgreSQL. When you do that, you get horizontal scaling for free. That means I can just say, Juju, my traffic in my forum is amazing. I need 20 more instances or my forum's gonna go down. You can actually do this and 20 more instances will fire up. I don't have to configure any of those things because I've already configured discourse to PostgreSQL, right? We're just tossing more machines into the pile. So with that, this has been called apt-get for the cloud. So discourse, when it gets at a bigger deployment, yeah. That is only increasing the number of discourse databases. Actually, the PostgreSQL charm would actually let me deploy slaves as well. But for my first example, that's kind of complicated. But I could probably show that to you here in a minute. So what I'm going to do is, these aren't live, unfortunately. So what I'm going to do is, as we get towards the end, I'm going to try to use the internet to show you like a live GUI deployment and stuff. And hopefully that'll help clear some things up. So discourse also, when it needs a bigger deployment, they recommend you run a Redis server to do jobs and stuff, whatever. I don't even know. I'm just deploying it, which is scary. So in this case, I'm deploying the Redis master server. I'm going to call the service Redis, and I'm going to relate that to discourse through the DB interface. So given that we're configuring things at the service level and not the machine level, that automatically means when that instance fires up and Redis gets installed, that Redis is configured to talk to all 20, well now 21, nodes of discourse, right? We're managing things at the service level, not the machine level. And then we can also pass things to servers, to services, right, using config options. And then the last thing we're gonna do, because we're on a public cloud and we never really know how long it takes for stuff to install, we just fire stuff off and then come back later. When you do Juju expose, that actually opens a port in your public cloud, and then you type your AWS address in your browser, and you have an internet forum. So this is really more about top down and not bottom up. And what I mean by that is, when I was a system administrator, right, you started off with bare metal, right? It's like you would order a server, and you open it up, yay, my new server's here, and then you would go plug it in, and it was really awesome, and then you'd have to redo your wiring, and you know, now looking back, that sounds romantic. Actually, it's horrible. And then at some point, virtualization came along, right? And you realize, oh, I can start consolidating a whole bunch of half-utilized servers on one server and then get utilization, get more bang for the buck, save on power and stuff. And, you know, I can actually use that quad-core machine, right? And that was good. And then someone kind of put an API on top of that and cloud computing came along, right? And then that was really good because it was like, hey, man, that means a developer can just call an API and then machines will just fire up somewhere. And then they just charge your credit card. It's amazing. So that's really good. It allowed, especially startups, right? If you think about, if you're a startup right now, me and a buddy or whatever, the amount of infrastructure you can deploy on Amazon without having to touch a piece of hardware is crazy. So now we gave developers the ability to call instances with an API, and of course they're developers, so what are they gonna do? Use it, right? Next thing you know, you have tons of machines laying around, right? And it's like, well, what's running where, and things like that. And then tools like configuration management came along, CF Engine, Chef, Puppet, and so on. I gave a talk here at about Puppet, I think 5 years ago now. And this was what I used to do is, my Ubuntu server, I would say, okay, this is gonna be a web server, right? And it would Pixie boot, it would install the OS, and then it would install Puppet, right? And then I would have a class in Puppet that would say, okay, you're gonna be a web server. You should have Apache, this, set the clock with NTP. Everyone always forgets to set the clock. I don't know why we suck at that. Here are my login credentials, here are my SSH keys, right? And you're starting with bare metal virtualization, clock operating, configuration management, and you're building from the bottom up, right? We think that the next step is gonna be service orchestration. We think that at some point when we're talking about when machines are numbering in the tens of thousands, that building from the bottom up isn't gonna scale as much as starting from the top down, right? So we say, you know what, instead of thinking you're gonna be a database, you're gonna be a web server, you should do this, this, and that. What we're saying is with service orchestration, you say, oh, I need a forum. I need WordPress, right? Nobody sets up machines, for the sake of setting, well, we do. But you're also at a Linux conference, so that's the kind of person you are, right? Yeah, my boss doesn't say, George, I need you to get 5 servers so we can set up a blog. He says, I need a blog, figure it out. And then I come back and say, yes, I need 3 servers, right? So if you think about it, it really is all about the service itself. And then once we figure that out, we all die with Skynet, and that sucks. So in Juju, the service is the first class citizen, not the machine. I know I've said that 100 times, but a lot of people have a hard time figuring that out. So I'm gonna give you another example. We're gonna write an app, and we're gonna go to production as fast as possible. So we're gonna create a small YAML file. It's gonna look like this. It's gonna say, we're gonna call my app sample app, very simple, and we're gonna give it a GitHub repo. This is just gonna be a Rails app, let's say. So this is actually a sample app, if you can actually pronounce that dude's name. But when you go in the documentation, we have it in there. You can follow along any of this, right? So we're gonna make a little file, and this guy's just gonna write a Rails app, right? This guy's gonna write the next Foursquare or something. It's amazing. You could say, you know what, Juju, I want you to deploy this Rails app called my app with this config file, and then we're gonna pass it that config file I just gave it. Right, bam, Amazon fires up, I got my instance, right? The Rails charm is gonna go to GitHub, it's gonna grab your stuff. You don't have to care about RVM or any of that stuff, right? Someone automated that for you. Crazy, I know. And bam, my app is now deployed. Doesn't work yet, obviously, because it's just an app sitting in a bubble. I know I need a proxy, I'm gonna stick a proxy up front. Right? And I'm gonna add a relation between that proxy and my app, right? And that's gonna do the things that normally you would have to manually configure by hand, right? SSH into the machine, app get install, AJ proxy, do all your configuration stuff, right? We know our app is gonna need a database, this is gonna be a web app. We're gonna use PostgreSQL again, and then we're gonna add the relation between the database and my app. And then we're gonna do a nifty trick here with Juju SSH to actually seed the database or migrate the database, it's up to you. And then we're gonna expose HAProxy. Then I'm gonna type Juju status, I'm gonna get the Amazon URL, I'm gonna paste that in my browser, and then my app is deployed live on AWS. Now some of you are thinking, man, that's really familiar workflow, very Heroku-ish, isn't it? It's cool, except it's cloud agnostic and cheaper. That's it, I'm done, I'm deployed, right? Now you call your friends, oh my God, I made a new Foursquare, it's gonna be great, we're all gonna be rich. Then you're on Hacker News, and then your website goes down, because you only just made it, whatever. You're gonna add 2 more units of my app. It's gonna fire stuff off. You're gonna pay your bill. You're good to go. Then everyone sees your app and says, yeah, that guy sucks. They're gonna yell at you for using the wrong technology, and then they're gonna go do something else. So you can remove unit as well, so you're not just paying for instances you're not using. So you can auto-scale based on load, right? We're not just talking about deployments. People always say this. They're like, man, I've got the best deployment tool ever. I can deploy all this awesome infrastructure. It's like, dude, that's like 10% of the thing. What about the whole 90% of the life cycle for that service, right? I need to be able to add stuff. I need to be able to say, I need more database stuff. I need more web heads. I need more caching. It's all about life cycle, right? Not just deploying. Sometimes tools do a really great job of getting your stuff out, and then it's like, well, now what? It's like, hey, man, I deployed. I'm out of here. See ya. And then what are you stuck doing again? As you have to SSH manually or something. This is really cool. Juju deploys on almost all the major public clouds and things that are not clouds like AWS. My favorite place where Juju deploys is called the local provider, which means that you can actually run all these commands, and instead of launching all this stuff in Amazon, it fires up an LXC container on your laptop and installs the exact same cloud image that you use on Amazon or HP Cloud or Microsoft Azure. This is important. This is why we call it DevOps Distilled, by the way. It is important for web developers to be able to develop stuff as close to production as they can get, right? One of the reasons Vagrant is so popular is web developers went out and they got Macs, and they're like, oh, that's cool. It's a Unix, right? But they would deploy to Linux, right? And then you had subtleties, right? Like, oh, okay, the version of Python is slightly different on this Linux my Mac than it is in production, right? That's why people love Vagrant. They can get the exact thing that their server is running on their Mac. So it's really cool because we can do containers, less overhead than a VM. So when you're doing Juju deploy PostgreSQL and Discourse and, you know, WordPress, whatever it is, right? It's just firing up locally. You can test rev quickly, right? You can mount the home directory between your app and your home directory, touch your WSGI file, and then just keep developing locally. What's also great about this is that you're interacting with your application the same way it would in a cloud, but you're doing it on your laptop, which means you're not spending money, which is important. Until the end of the day, when you're done hacking on your code and you want to show your buddies, Juju switch AWS, fire up the Juju commands to redeploy your app again, bam, then it's up and running on Amazon. It takes about 6 minutes, right? Most of that is waiting for the image to run. I'm not manually digging around for AMIs. I'm not doing any of that stuff. So usually people are like, big whoop, you deployed an internet forum. My example used to be WordPress, and they were like, man, that's really slick, but deploying WordPress and managing WordPress is really kind of a solved problem. But that was just a simple example. The things that we can deploy with Juju with some of these charms gets really, really complex and really complicated, and it makes things that are really, really complex feasible. I've deployed a 250-node Hadoop cluster in 7.5 minutes. I've never even read the book, man. So it's awesome, right? You can grab the book, and you can already start deploying this stuff. And not you could skip like the whole, you know, install it, type make dot configure. You're like, man. So we're using this in production. We deploy a 12 node ring in Cassandra. I think it has something like 12 terabytes before replication. We can install entire Hadoop stacks in about 4 or 5 commands. We do this weird thing where we can actually use Juju to deploy OpenStack, and then you reconfigure Juju to deploy those services on top of OpenStack. So it's something very inception there. So that's pretty great. We can deploy MongoDBs with sharding and all that stuff in the same few commands. And the Rails example that I gave you here, you can do this with Node.js. Django apps, not quite so much. We're working on that. We want to make that very, very easy. So the Juju Charm Store, where you do Juju deploy, whatever, it currently has over 130 services. So what's really great about these charms is that they're all free software. And hopefully I'm going to show you here in a few minutes, because I think I'm getting gutsy, and I think I'm going to try to do the live thing. So what's really great about these charms, what I talk about, is they're all free software. You can use as little as much as you want in whatever language you want, which is really awesome. And what I mean by whatever language you want, I mean also reusing Chef, Puppet, Ansible. We've done some SaltStack stuff, things like that. So when you're actually typing Juju deploy discourse, that charm, which is a set of scripts, and I'll show you here in a few minutes, you can kind of do whatever you want. The Juju Charm Store also, because we've been building a distribution for so long, we can take all the processes that we've learned about packaging things like that and apply that to the charm store, which is basically a repository of stuff. As a result, the Juju Charm store never freezes, right? You ever have this problem where it's like, hey, I'm going to deploy my SQL, but I'm using 1204, which is now what? Over a year old, right? Let's say it's 2 years down the road, and you're like, oh man, I'm stuck with this version of MySQL. Then you're hunting for PPAs and things like that. With the charms, we can actually make config options on where you want your source to come from, right? You can add a switch to say, you know what? I want the MySQL from a PPA. You know what? I want to build MySQL from source. You know what? I want it to grab the custom packages from my internal mirror. We kind of let you do what you want, and that's really great, especially for fast-moving technologies in the cloud, right? How many of you are using Node.js on Ubuntu at all, right? Every single Node.js developer I know has to use a PPA from Chris Lee because the one that we put in the distribution is so old that it's horrible. But with the charm is really great. Every time you deploy, you can actually tell it, I want trunk, I want the latest stable, or you know what? I want whatever was on GitHub, which is crazy. But hey, whatever, it's up to you. So we've made a really lightweight contribution process around charms. And most of you are probably 90% there, right? When I was a sysadmin, I had the same set of crusty old bash scripts that I would take around with me where I went everywhere. Hey man, dude, how do I set this up? It's like, awesome, I've got this script here. It's probably busted or whatever. What if we were able to take all of these scripts and all these little tips about deploying stuff and make that part of the operating system? So Josh Berkus, he's a well-known PostgreSQL guy, right? And I'm always trying to get tips from him because I see him at scale. And I'm like, man, you know, give me some tips on, you know, how to make this perform better or whatever. And we all know a person like that, or we try to, right? That's why you come to these conferences. You're like, man, I'm using this technology at work. I like to get better at it. Things of that nature. But that's not what you really want. What you really want, you want that dude to come to your data center and give you the hookup is what you really want, right? That's what you want. So the idea is why don't we make it so that anyone who deploys PostgreSQL, we know what it needs to do to talk to discourse in the absolute most efficient way possible. Why don't we make that the default? It sounds so simple too, right? So for example, our WordPress charm. If you talk to anybody who does WordPress, they'd be like, yeah, WordPress scaling can kind of be a challenge, but if you add Memcache, it's really great. And then you turn on Nginx, and it has like this reverse caching thing, and it's really, really awesome, right? And it's like, man, why is it when you app get install WordPress, you just get like unzipped PHP in a directory? That sucks, right? I mean, it's great to get the software. That's not what you really want, right? You want a WordPress expert 10 minutes. You want a WordPress expert to come give you the hookup and do all those little tweaks to Nginx and all that stuff. So we did that. We had a guy do that. And our WordPress deployment right now in the Charm Store is brutally fast. I'll take the Pepsi challenge on the WordPress performance stuff. So we can deploy to EC2. We can deploy to OpenStack. We can deploy to MAZ, which means instead of firing up an Amazon instance, right, it'll turn on a machine and deploy that stuff. And like I showed you the local development. If you run the cloud, you should come talk to me, especially if you're having a hard time getting your software in front of server users, right? We can just give them the charm. Juju will be included by default in Ubuntu 14.04, and it's basically the equivalent of being in the archive, right? The user isn't gonna know. I'm currently running a contest where I'm giving away over $60,000 in prizes. I've got six categories. You get 10 grand in each category, high availability, monitoring, logging, and I'm looking for people to put together bundles. And we've got some great judges. We have Adrian Cockroft from Netflix is gonna be one of our judges in the media category. We have folks from NTT and other telecoms doing the telco category. We have Florian Haas from, he's one of the linuxavailability.org guys. We have a whole section just for high availability. So if you want to put together awesome deployments, I'm giving away prizes. And here's the URL to that. Sorry, it doesn't read very well. But it's called the Juju Charm Championship. You should check it out. Here's the homepage. And you could go to jujucharms.com, which I'll show you in a second with the last time that I have. And then here are charms on GitHub. Let me just give you an idea. Because in the presentation, with no internet, I had to show you the GUI, right? So let's deploy something. So what happens is you fire this up either internally or on your laptop or whatever, and then you can start to deploy stuff. So What are you guys into? What do you guys want to? What do you run? Anybody? What? Okay, that's a complex one. That's a, so not for this demo, but we can. But let me start easy. So this is awesome. All right, it's like people are like, how to run a Minecraft server in Ubuntu, right? It's always like this how-to. How many servers do we want? Let's 5. I don't care. I don't want to give it any constraints and deploy. Now, this is a mock-up, so that green line turned green really quickly. What happens is that'll progress, right, as your instance is booting up and things like that, right? Now, Minecraft is a service that's a standalone. It doesn't really connect to anything, right? But we can certainly do. Everyone's familiar with WordPress, so we can do that. This is cool. It gives me instructions on how to use it, which is basically a way easier thing to follow than my presentation. We're going to deploy one WordPress instance. What database does it talk to? MySQL. Our MySQL charm is really awesome. It does master-slave and all sorts of replication business, but I'm not going to show you that right now because I'm running out of time, right? And remember, now we have separate instances, but you know, Juju's all about the relationships, so I'm going to build this relation between like this. If you've set up WordPress before, this is the stuff you're manually doing, right? And then we're going to not expose the database, but I certainly want to expose WordPress. Oh, that is what I'm doing here. I'm going to close this, and then we say, oh, maybe I do care about the units. So we have one of one units. We can import the config files here. We can say, these are called constraints. You can say, Amazon, actually, I want at least, you know, X amount of CPUs, X amount of RAM. I can just fill in these numbers, and it'll do it. It's like crazy. Here's what relations look like. And what's really nice about the WordPress one, because we are using Nginx, you don't need to put a proxy in front of it. Nginx has this cool feature where it is, hey, I'm a web node, go to another one, so you don't have to have a separate instance for a proxy. So if actually I can do that, and it will still do what I think it's going to do. Hey, sure, whatever. So bam, 9 more instances will run up, and you've got one of the coolest WordPress installations you can get. That's 10 nodes with a database. And then with databases, you could do master, slave. It's in here somewhere. I don't know, but you get the idea. I've got 5 minutes left, but I really want to field some questions. Does anybody have any questions? I know I've gone through a ton of stuff here. Yes, sir? Yeah, so what we do is one of the things we learned from building an archive is that people really love personal namespaces, right? So when you do it for MySQL, the one with the logo is actually the official supported MySQL charm that you know will work. It'll be awesome. Anybody, however, can push their branch up to the public store. So what you see here, this one, it doesn't have the icon. And I'm making this more obvious here. See, this is like an older unsupported one from an Eric. Let me see if I can find a personal one here. See, this is actually a personal namespace, similar to GitHub, right, where people have branches for different things, right? Because what we want to do is get you in there and say, you know what, the guy who did this MySQL thing missed this little config option, I can fix it, right? So we're building a community around DevOps who want to contribute better scripts for everyone. You've asked 2 questions. You get a shirt. Man, look at that accuracy. Yeah. Sure. A new one, so that's a lightweight process I was talking about. You go to juju.ubuntu.com, and then you click on Docs, and then it says, how to submit a charm. Or you can just contact me. What's it called? What are you working on? What is it? I don't think I have that. Yeah. But what's really cool is anybody can add stuff. So let's say you use, any of you guys use New Relic at all? You can just say juju deploy New Relic, and New Relic will just tack on to all those WordPress instances and just start, right, you pass your like license key or whatever, and it just starts populating your dashboard. It's ridiculous. So anything that has a client really is awesome because we have a concept of subordinate that runs on every instance, right? So you can have, deploy backup on top of my MySQL databases, and it will know what to do, right? We have a cool backup charm that like will send snapshots of MySQL into an S3 bucket. It's pretty sweet. Yeah. Okay.
For folks like me, Alan Bell, Alan Pope, we all look at deploying home
Yes, I'm glad you brought this up. So home server is actually one of the biggest issues people are complaining about. They're like, this is really great if you're like, you know, deploying thousands of stuff, right? And we show you related charms and we show you the code and all these features and stuff. What about me, man? I got a little server in my thing and I want to be able to juju deploy my own blog or whatever. So we are working on something called manual provisioning that will just let you define any Ubuntu box that has an open SSH port and you'll be able to treat them as a cloud, which is great because all of a sudden your $10 a month DigitalOcean VPS, you can deploy all of those charms on one instance, right? And it's just as cool. What's awesome about that is Juju, let's say you have a DigitalOcean, what, 10 bucks a month, right? You could say Juju deploy all of these services on one box, right? But then you get popular. You can say Juju deploy extra WordPress, but I want those on separate machines. So you can start small and get big and then back down. I think that's awesome. That's cool. Yeah. Doesn't work right now, but it will. Yeah. That is a really good question. So a lot of charms, this is charm specific, but a lot of charms allow you to define the version in config. So normally when I do these Juju talks, it's like a 3-hour workshop because it can get kind of complicated. But in here, this example, this charm takes an argument for a release string where you can say, you know, date, git branch. A lot of them just give you a version number. That really works well, right? Because you deploy something, 2 months later there's a new release, right? You don't want to deploy that release. You want to deploy the same one that you have over the same instance. Test that, fire up a new instance, fire up a new environment, fire it up with the new stuff, test all of your things, right? And then kick over DNS, right? Or whatever you do. So yeah, you can certainly do config. There's been, now remember this is live, which is really great because there's times I was, oh man, that's a little bit too bleeding edge for me. And you change the, all right, we do PHP admin has a flag that says run the package version and run the upstream version, right? And then I changed it during a talk and I refreshed PHP admin. I was like, you know? And but like the version number just changed on the website. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. And I changed it back. No, like I couldn't believe it. It was crazy. So yeah, versioning is something. Now, that really depends on the service too. Some software, it upgrades, right? And then they guarantee that the database schema won't change, right? Some projects don't care. Right. Hey, this is supposed to be a minor point release. Too late, you've accidentally deployed it in production. That sucks. So yeah, but that's really service dependent, and that's somewhere where someone's expertise in that software working on the charm really pays off. So, yes, sir.
Another question. So about,
we start giving away the shirts. Yeah.
How do you connect to your service provider? So, you know,
Sure, so I could show you that. Let's hope I don't have my real, well, oh, all right. There's a config file I could show you afterwards, but they're kicking me out. Okay, I have shirts for everybody. So come up and get a shirt. I hope you enjoyed the talk. If not, come talk to me. I've got tons more to say and explain to people. Thank you very much. Also, thank you for using Ubuntu Server. Really appreciate it. Thank you.